Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Tyler Barkey. Tyler Barkey has worked with adolescents, young adults, and adults for over 10 years in many different counseling settings. Tyler's goal is to meet people where they are and help get them to the place they want to be. He uses his own personal experiences and passion for growth to help motivate and hopefully inspire others to live a purposeful life. We all know life isn't always easy, but Tyler believes that everyone has the ability to grow into the person they aspire to be. Tyler, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It is my absolute pleasure to have you as a guest contributor today.
Thanks for having me. Been looking forward to it.
Yes, we had a very good pre-chat. I mean, we covered a lot of territory. We covered a lot about your background, and I knew immediately you were going to be a good fit for the podcast, and your message is going to resonate with many of my listeners. So with that, let's get right into it. Please tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions today.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, started right out the gate. I was born into a not so ideal situation. My dad's a drug addict, and you know, luckily my mom was there to take care of us. But that is what I was born into. That's what I knew, and you know, I wasn't too sure how different it was probably until about, I was like 7, 8 years old. I started seeing therapists, counselors, psychiatrists, psychologists, and it felt like there was this preparation for something, and I didn't really know what was going on. And in school, we'd come back from break and things like that, and I would talk about, you know, visiting my dad in prison, because that's where he ended up. And I realized that no one else was talking about that. So it's when I started to kind of catch on that maybe the way I was, you know, I was growing up, what I was born into, my situation was just different from the norm. And you know, later on in life, I realized a lot of my ways of thinking and emotional responses to situations, definitely came from growing up in that sort of environment. But you know, being aware of it, it gave me something to work on. So kind of fast forward a little bit, I had a real hesitation to try drugs and alcohol because I saw what it did to my family for most of my life. I might have known too much too soon. But, you know, come freshman year high school, right before freshman year, you know, I had friends who were drinking and smoking weed and everything seemed to be okay with them. So I figured it was worth a shot. You know, maybe I was different than my family. And sure enough, I fell in love. You know, it felt like everything that was missing in my life came to in that moment, you know. So I hit the ground running. It was a fast disease for me. You know, I'd say by my sophomore year, I was already using pharmaceuticals. I was drinking more often. I was getting in trouble at school, things like that. But I still wasn't too sure that I had a problem or a problem bad enough that I needed to change anything. And at this point, I was still seeing therapists and counselors. And but, you know, being a young adult, I was 99% sure anything I said in that room was going to be relayed to my parents. And so I wasn't saying anything, you know, because I didn't want anything to change. I thought what I was doing was beneficial for me, and thought that it was the right thing to do to a degree. So come, you know, about 17 years old, end of my senior year, you know, all my friends are getting scholarships to colleges and things like that. And, you know, they ask me, what are you going to do? And I'm like, oh, I don't know, you know, gap year maybe. Cause I didn't look into the future at all as far as what I was going to do after high school. Cause I wasn't too sure on how far I was going to make it in life. You know, it was a gray area. So oddly enough, around that same time, one of my drug dealers I lost contact with at the time, called me, and he had told me he had gotten sober. That sounds like a bad joke, but that's exactly what happened. And he invited me to come to this program that he was in, because he thought I could use it. So, you know, I figured why not? I was losing a lot of friends at this point. I didn't have anywhere to go, no direction. So I went, and it was the first time that I met a group of people that spoke my language. You know, there are people around my age, give or take, you know, a few years, some older, some younger, that also struggled with substance abuse and mental health issues. So I fit right in, you know, and I heard different versions of my story from many different people. And again, it was like all these things started to connect in my head. So I jumped into that with 2 feet, and it, you know, it wasn't easy. It was definitely one of the hardest things I had to do, but changing my surroundings and my friends was absolutely necessary for my recovery and my sobriety and my, you know, connection with my family, everything I had lost, you know, substance abuse. So, I was in that program for a few years. I did a couple rounds of treatment. I wasn't perfect. So, just need a little extra help, which was okay. And, that's where I kind of started my career too. You know, having that connection with someone who spoke my language, I wanted to be able to be that for someone who felt like they didn't have anyone they related to. So I worked at, you know, many different capacities in the recovery realm, all the way from, you know, individual counseling to residential, you know, everything in between. So I have a lot of experience, and I like to use that experience today to not only connect with the people I talk to and make them feel like they're not alone in their battle of whatever it is, but also know what could be the most beneficial for them as far as treatment, if that's what they need, right? So I think experience is the best teacher, and that's what I try to use my experience for others to hopefully benefit from.
Well, for individuals like yourself, and you've been in recovery now, you've been sober for, is it 16 years, am I correct?
16 years, October 12th of 2024.
Yeah, we're coming up on the anniversary of your date of your sobriety very soon. And congratulations on almost 16 years of sobriety. That is fabulous. As somebody who has worked in the addiction field for over 27 years, we heard stories of individuals who didn't make it. And more often, we never heard the stories of those individuals that did make it. But in reality, there are a lot more people that make it in recovery than are given credit for. And that's, I think, because, and we'll get to this later, but I think the stigma attached to addiction in general. But what you did in your recovery, I think one is, you know, you talked about changing people, places, and things, which is a must. You know, to change your surroundings, to change your associates, and you know, to change your relationship, you know, with alcohol and other drugs, so that you can embrace sober living. It sounds like you had the support to do this, you had the motivation to do this, you had the understanding of the need to do this, and I think it's just great. I think you are a testament to many of individuals who have had issues with substance abuse that have recovered and embraced recovery. And I also think it's great that you're using your experience to help others, because that is for many individuals who have embraced recovery, it's giving it back.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's huge. It wouldn't work without it. You know, I don't feel great when I'm not trying to go help others just in my free time, you know, cause I feel like what I have gotten from other people, is a gift to be shared, truly.
Yeah. And I mean, again, what you've done with your opportunity to embrace drug-free living is really admirable. And I know you're the owner and the creator of Third Chance Services. You just do coaching, am I correct? Third Chance Services?
Yes. Individual coaching and counseling.
So who typically requests your services and what type of services do you provide for those individuals?
Yeah, so right now it's anyone 14 and up. The majority of the people I meet with are about the high school age or getting out of high school. You know, some individuals aren't sure what they want to do after high school. And I really relate to that. So that's mostly who I meet with. But I try not to put a cap on an age. Cause I, you know, the past year or so I've been working with, older adults, you know, family men and things like that. And it's really helped me understand more about recovery in that sense. So in most of the time, you know, the services I provide, it's very, you know, I try to get the client to engage enough with themselves that not only are they learning, but they're giving themselves another chance at this person they want to be. Mm-hmm. I often see people really not believe that they have what it takes. And I relate to that. You know, I was the only person who didn't believe in myself. Everyone around me did, and I needed to lean on that. So really, when it comes to, you know, third chance, it's about you giving yourself a third chance at being whoever it is you want to be. And you know, going on that journey with them and figuring out like just how to be that. So that's mostly my goal. And there's, you know, it's not strictly just for people who are in recovery. It's people who aren't in recovery as well. Whether they want to be or not, you know, it's, if that's part of what they need to change to be the person they want to be, we can absolutely tackle that. But I've met with some individuals that don't struggle with drugs and alcohol, and it's more of just taking these at, like, what's my action plan? You know, what do I do? So that one-on-one for me is very important space to be in.
Well, I imagine too, that the challenges that clients present that aren't addiction related are still life issues that many individuals with addiction have had to deal with when they've embraced sobriety. So, and I'm sure many of those issues that they present are those that you dealt with as well. So, I mean, it's just that addiction. It's just everything that gets affected as a result of that. And it requires taking a look at all aspects of our life once we embrace the need for drug-free living. And so there's a lot of related categories, I think, that spring off of addiction.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things I wanted to ask, I know we talked about this during pre-chat and prior conversations, is the role of spirituality for individuals who embrace recovery. I know you talked about the role spirituality had for you in terms of embracing recovery. Can you tell our listeners how you define spirituality? And from your perspective, why is it an important aspect for somebody who's thinking about embracing recovery to entertain and to incorporate into the recovery plan?
Absolutely. As far as defining it, you know, that's a forever changing answer, right? I think the first grasp I had on spirituality, a higher power, some call God, I needed the use of acronyms because they're really easy to remember, right? So as I heard God for the first time in a recovery sense, I got really scared. And then someone defined it to me as a group of drunks, group of dope fiends, and good orderly direction. Mm-hmm. And that might sound a little weird, but for me, when I made that connection and I realized that, you know, prior to that word being introduced to me in my recovery, I was relying on a group of drunks and dope fiends to be okay and to feel better and to get direction. Because I think why it's so important in recovery is I am the one who thought myself into this disease. I'm the one with my best ideas. I landed in rehab at 17. Therefore, my functioning, my brain power it's being used against me, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the nature of the beast. So I needed a different employer. You know, I needed someone or something else that I can bounce these ideas off of and seek guidance from. And for me, it was those group of drunks. You know, they had already been through that walk that I was walking on my journey, and they were able to tell me, yeah, you're doing what you need to do, or here's what I would think about moving ahead. Right. And I think for me, when I first felt or experienced, I guess that like spiritual awakening was, it was when I was in treatment the first time. And there was a younger guy who came in and just had wanted nothing to do with sobriety. And he was such a good dude. I mean, just such a good guy, you know, and me and him clicked off the bat. And, you know, we're hanging out all the time. And one of the staff brought up to me that I was someone he looked up to. And that scared me because I was like, I don't even necessarily know what I'm doing, you know, but it motivated me to go seek some of these answers and to act as if I did and that I wanted this because from what they told me, if anyone was going to have an effect on his progression, I could have a part to play in that. So I wanted it for him more than I cared about it for me. And at the end of that, you know, I realized how much I'd grown. Some of the things I had said or, you know, I didn't know I knew. And for me that, you know, I call that love. And it helped me become a person that I didn't know I could be for others. And like we were talking about earlier, you know, giving back all what I have received is that's what got me in tune with something bigger and greater than myself. And I absolutely needed that to perform to the extent that I was going to continue to stay sober and grow. And that's what people did for me.
You bring up a couple of really, you know, good points. One, spirituality is a very much individualized process.
Yes.
Everybody has a different perception of what provides meaning for them, different tools, different practices. But one of the biggest constants and one of the things I always used to hear individuals who are in recovery say about the 12-step fellowship, whether it be AA, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, is that when they were in that group, they felt connected to something greater than themselves. They had a fellowship of brothers and sisters, you know, that understood the challenges that they had, understood the struggles that they had, and were able to hold a compassionate space for that. And one of the biggest things for me, one of the biggest components of creating spiritual awareness, is being connected to something greater than yourself and getting inspired by that. And also taking a look at how that connection can, you know, going within with that connection and determining, okay, what kind of a person do I want to now be at coming out of the other side? And as you mentioned, a big piece is showing love and compassion. And that's some of the individuals who are the most spiritually aware people that I know lead with love and they lead with compassion and empathy. So, and the other thing, when you mentioned about some individuals being really turned off by the whole God concept that permeates the 12 steps of AA or any other 12-step fellowship. You know, a lot of times young adults who, you know, when you talk about spirituality, they go, I don't want to be religious. Well, you could be spiritual, but not religious. You could.
Yes.
And that's the thing that I tell them. So what do you draw from that's going to provide you comfort in times that are troubling for you? Is it nature? Is it listening to music? Those are all practices that can help give you peace and create greater awareness. And that is something that, you know, that God concept prevents a lot of young adults from engaging in the 12-step fellowship. So they might do other options like secular organizations for sobriety or rational recovery that doesn't really have the God concept or anything that would smack of religion or spirituality in that. It's just basically based on a cognitive behavioral therapy approach to help individuals manage and embrace sober living without that spiritual or religious undertones that some of the 12 steps have. So,
yes. Which it's, I love that argument when I meet someone new in recovery and they see, you know, the God word or spirituality or things like that. And, you know, I don't rely on anyone or anything. And I'm like, well, what were you doing before you got sober? You're relying on drugs and alcohol to make you feel better, right? It's almost the same idea. I just never got arrested for praying. I never got, you know, lost something because I was trying to practice spirituality. I only gained, right? So I love having those conversations with people that are so new to it because they don't realize how much they're already doing some of that. They just don't put those words on it, which is, again, one of my favorite parts about spirituality is call it whatever you want, as long as it's working.
And I know for me, in about the last probably 5 or 6 years of my time as an addictions counselor and a clinical supervisor, in a state-run addiction agency, I saw a lot of younger-age individuals coming into treatment, probably between 18 and 24 were the majority of them, and a lot of them were on, we had opioid addictions, heroin addiction, and of course, you know, we now know about fentanyl and the dangers of that and the opioid crisis, but the bottom line is that we're getting individuals who are coming into treatment younger, who are being diagnosed younger, and so, and we have to to do holistic treatment, we have to embrace spirituality, but we have to, for that population, let them know, hey, there's a difference between being spiritual and being religious. And if you're willing to listen to that, I'll even tell young adults, you're probably doing things right now that are spiritual and you don't even know it.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. I love watching that.
Me too. And you see their eyes get like really wide and, oh my goodness, you mean I don't have to be religious and I can be spiritual? Absolutely. You can believe what you choose to believe, as long as you are feeling connected to something greater than yourself, you're feeling at peace, it all works.
Absolutely.
Let's get back to your coaching services for a minute. Let's say I wanted to retain you as a coach. Mm-hmm. So if I were to contact you for coaching services, what can I reasonably expect is going to happen? Take me through that process of me being a new client.
Sure. So for starters, I have, you know, people I'm meeting with do an initial assessment. It goes into a little bit of their background, family background, but it also has some really important questions about their goals, what they want to accomplish in coaching or counseling, and how do they see that, what would success look like, right? And I like to have that just in case, you know, 3 months, 6 months down the line, if they feel stuck or they feel like they didn't make improvement, we can go back to the beginning and look how many changes you've already made, right? So based on that assessment and what they're wanting to work on, that's usually where we start. Now, I usually tell them, as far as coaching goes and as far as how I like to approach meeting with an individual, is you're in the driver's seat. You know, I'm in the passenger seat with the mat. You just got to, you know, I want to work together on getting you wherever you want to be, but you're driving this. And I'll point out roadblocks, speed bumps along the way. But I want to know what it is you want to talk about. You know, I might have my own agenda, but that's usually always my first question when I'm sitting down with someone is, what do you want to talk about today? Right. And sometimes they have a lot, sometimes like nothing really. And then we can get into some, okay, how are these goals going? Mm-hmm. You know, so about 45 minutes to an hour is usually how long I meet with individuals, but I try to at least leave a space of about an hour and a half, just in case we go there. You know what I mean? I've had conversations with people that have lasted 4, 5, 6 hours because we were going there and we needed to, right? And to me, that experience, those are the conversations I had in recovery, you know, watching the sunrise, being like, how long have we been talking about this stuff? That really helped me process and really understand what it is I was working towards. So, as far as what to expect, it's, you know, we're talking about what's on your mind and what you want to talk about and work on.
And I think that makes a good deal of sense to use that approach for a couple of things. One is individuals who come in looking for services are typically feeling disempowered for a lot of different reasons. Either they may not have been, their concerns may not have been heard in their family of origin or with their friends or with other therapists or coaches. The other thing is that it's ethical practice. I mean, if you take a look at the code canon of ethics in any type of human service or health service profession, it's all about client self-determination, client determining what type of treatment or in treatment resources they are willing to avail themselves of. And what I always tell my students, and whether I'm teaching a counseling course or an impact of addiction on children and families course, is that a client is not going to take you where they don't want to go. The most resistive client's going to leave a door open and say, here, this is a door I want you to walk through. That's the door you go through. If you try to walk through any other door, they're going to shut it down shut the door that they already opened up for you. They're going to walk out the door.
Yes.
And they'll never come back. So once you meet them where they're at, then you can make suggestions about some other areas that you believe that would benefit their overall recovery program, but with the understanding that it's their choice in terms of when and if they access that suggestion.
Absolutely. I love to start wherever they are, right? You said it, just be where you're at and let's go there, you know? And, you know, unless I see anything that's putting them in immediate danger, it really is that it can be that lax, you know? And I, pulling from my experience of, you know, 10 plus years of being in therapy and counseling, I was able, or at least the goal of Third Chance Services was to take what I liked and leave what I didn't, right? To help other people who have met with other counselors and therapists that are really against it, to create this comfortable space where they are going to let me go there with them in those places and have those conversations. Another one of my favorite things about Third Chance Services is I don't have an office, which I do that on purpose because where do you want to meet? Where's a place you feel comfortable? You know, I go to parks, different coffee shops, libraries, they have study rooms you can rent out. And I found that to be a real benefit for them as well, because it's their turf, you know, I don't want to put them somewhere where they're really uncomfortable because I've already lost, you know?
Yeah. And I think anything that we can do right from the get-go to send that message of empowerment, that I'm here for you, not for any agenda that I may have. I think in addition to other qualities that go beyond our qualifications, qualities such as warmth, such as genuineness, such as genuine empathy, that combination is going to draw people into the treatment contract and the treatment relationship because you're looking at them as a person first and not as their presenting problem.
Exactly.
And that is to me very key.
Yes. Yes. It's huge.
One of the things that I always struggled with as a therapist was that there were more individuals that needed treatment than recovery resources available. Today, what are the recovery resources that you see available to help substance users in their quest to embrace drug-free living? And do you believe those available resources will be sufficient to address the needs of those who require substance use treatment?
Right. That is a great question. So I'm currently in Colorado, and I'm very fortunate to have been here as long as I have and to be connected with the resources out here. And it's funny because I think that solely depends on the individual. I do think we're outnumbered with how many people need the services versus how much there is. Absolutely. But I'm a firm believer in you get out what you put in, you know. If you go to a treatment program and you're unwilling, chances are you're not going to get much out of it, right? Now, I have met individuals that, you know, some of the programs I've worked at, we are their fourth, fifth, sixth program they've been to. And because they had these negative experiences or whatever it might be, it made our program more attractive, if that makes sense. So I feel like it almost all works together. And depending on the individual, again, if they want what you have as a program, as a counselor, chances are they're going to be more willing to get it. And I do think there's a lot of, there's so many services for these individuals. And you know, we're talking residential, you know, intensive outpatient, but there's also programs like AA, CA, NA that are free and you really choose to go there. No one's going to tell you what to do. No one's going to keep you there against your will. And you can come and go as you please, which I think for those individuals who struggle with authority figures, that's the best way to go.
Yeah, and I think many individuals that I've counseled over the years have struggled with authority figures because one of the first issues they've had with authority figures have been in their own family of origin, particularly if there's been addiction or any other type of dysfunction. The other thing that you had mentioned before, and I really want to really impress this with our listeners, it does, for many individuals who go into treatment, it takes more than one treatment episode for them to embrace recovery. It may take two, three, or four, It doesn't mean that they want recovery any less. It just meant that they need more, you know, that
yes,
what they didn't get in the second treatment, they what they didn't get in the second treatment episode, they may get in the third treatment episode. And whenever I mm-hmm. worked with an individual who had a history of multiple relapses, I would say, okay, I know what you got during the first three episodes. What didn't you get? So let's yes. work with what's missing. I already know what you got. You got that foundation, and you could probably recite every lecture that you've ever had to me. I could put you up there and you could do a drug information series very easily. But let's talk about what you didn't get, and let's yeah. go from there. And let's yes. see what we can look at from your prior relapses, the strengths that you discovered that helped you maintain sobriety for a significant period of time. And let's apply that to this episode mm-hmm. while we're also looking at what you missed in the previous episode. So
absolutely.
For as long as I can remember, there's been a stigma so attached to those individuals struggling with substance use disorder. From your perception, mm-hmm. what do you believe has contributed to the stigma, and what steps can be taken to shatter the stigma around addiction?
Yeah. You know, I think what's contributed to this ongoing stigma against, you know, drug addicts, alcoholics, things like that is, you know, when you're in your disease, you do things that you don't want to do. You know, you take a lot of actions that you don't feel good about. I know I had a lot of that when I got sober, and I'm really grateful for I utilized the 12-step program, and I was able to go back and make those things right to the best of my ability and understand why I did those things and what needed to change in me to not contribute to that stigma. And unfortunately, not everyone gets sober that needs to, or that even wants to, you know? So it puts a sour taste in your mouth sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I've used this before, this metaphor. It's like not every McDonald's I've been to was great, but I don't write off every single McDonald's after that, right? So it's individuals can mess this up just like anyone else can, mm-hmm. right? And I think for me, the thing I did to get over that stigma was internal, because where I got sober, no one held that against me. I held that against me. You know, I was like, I'm hopeless. I don't deserve this. I'm yeah. broken. But again, no one else was saying that, you know, maybe some of the people I met on the streets did, but they weren't the people I was doing this for anyways, you know? So I you know, how do you overcome it? It's, I think if you mentioned it earlier, we don't hear a lot about the successes because not everyone's going out there and talking about it, right? And I don't know if they should or not, but I think, you know, I know the impact I've had on my friends and family because of the tools I have learned in my recovery, that I think some of them have changed their mind on what that can look like, you know? So I think it's these small wins with having the impact on the people, you know, that's really going to change that. But at the end of the day, if you can fight your own stigma, that's how you're going to beat it.
Well, you know, I think the other thing, many individuals who don't understand the dynamics of addiction see an individual as their addiction. They don't see them as the person behind the addiction. And what I always was taught is that you treat the behavior and you don't compromise the self-esteem of the individual. It's let's take a look at the behaviors that are contributing to this. And you are a good person. You are a good person. Mm-hmm. We need to deal with the behavior that's getting in the way of your goals. And I mean, and I'm sure you've seen this too, Tyler. I mean, I've worked with many individuals who had substance use issues, who were intelligent, creative, passionate. When they were sober and they had periods of sobriety under their belt, they were doing great service work. That gets overlooked in this whole process of addiction. It's like, well, either you recover or you don't. But we don't, a lot of times individuals don't look, what are those periods in between where they were successful, but yet for whatever reason, they had to pick up the dance with addiction again. We can't disavow those periods of success that they had, because that's also a part of their disease process and also a part of the recovery process.
Absolutely. absolutely. I agree entirely.
If you're going to leave our listeners with one thing today, what would that be, Tyler?
Give yourself a shot. You know, don't be afraid to take those risks. And that those are the things I heard that I really needed to hear. You know, I wasn't aware of this at many different points in my life, but there are so many people that believe in me and believe in you and everyone around you, right? But when I get stuck in my own head, that's when I talk myself out of trying these new things and trying to be the person I want to be, you know? And truly that's, you know, one of the hardest parts about starting my own company, the Third Chance Services, that kept me up at night for hours was, what do you call this? Right? Like, I want to draw people in to know what it is I'm trying to do. And I think it was 2 a.m. I woke my wife up. I'm like, I got it. Third Chance Services, because I've had my second chance. I've had my second chance. And it was that individual and myself giving myself that third chance that made the whole difference. You know, so it's, you know, use your chances wisely, but you have more than you know. And it's about giving yourself that third chance when no one else will.
Thank you. That's some wise advice and a wise takeaway that I know our listeners will resonate with. And my last question for you is, people want to get in touch with you, contract for your services. Mm-hmm. What's the best way for them to do that?
So I have a website. It's www.thirdchanceservices.com, just spelled out. And also my phone number would be the easiest way. It's on my website. It's 720-655-3845. And that's where it all starts, that initial phone call. So those are the best ways to get a hold of me.
Well, first of all, thank you for being such a great guest contributor today and sharing your passions about your recovery and about the work that you do, not only with recovering substance users, but with anybody who does life challenges. I wish you well in your continued quest and to help others as a result of your own challenges. And the other thing is, thank you for working with a population that has of substance users, recovering substance users, who have been among my greatest teachers. They've taught mm-hmm. me a lot about life. They've taught me a lot about myself, and they're just a beautiful group of individuals who have had difficulty putting down the dance with addiction. And we need to be aware of that. We need to understand that it's the behavior that we're treating, and not compromising the self-esteem of the individual who's doing it, because their self-esteem has been compromised because they're aware of the impact that their choices have had, particularly when they're embracing recovery. And I will certainly be rooting for you to continue to make the impact that you are. So again, thank you again for that. Thank you for spending some time with us today.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And again, I was looking forward to this for a long time and appreciate that opportunity. I didn't know what was going to come out of this, but it was really exciting to do this and it was a great conversation between you and I. So thank you.
I agree. It was a great conversation and I look forward to more.
Absolutely.
And with that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.